And welcome to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the American Lung Association, we have its Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Albert Rizzo, and Chief Mission Officer, Deb Brown. Welcome, and welcome back, Deb.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, let's see. Let's get started with my first question is, always want to give us that mission statement of who and what is the American Lung Association?
Well, the American Lung Association is a nonprofit health organization that has been in existence for over 100 years. And our mission is to promote lung health and prevent lung disease by saving lives and save lives through education, advocacy, and research.
And we're here today because another one of your seminal research projects, one of your reports, is out. And this time around, it's the State of Lung Cancer Report. I think we talked last about the state of the air. And today, it's the state of lung cancer. Do you want to talk a little bit about these briefs and why you put these reports out before we delve into what you found out?
Sure. I'm happy to do that. The American Lung Association has identified defeating lung cancer as one of its priorities. And lung cancer is the nation's leading cause of cancer deaths, and it's responsible for approximately 130,000 deaths annually. And so as we prioritize this, one of the areas that we look at is our fifth annual State of Lung Cancer Report. It shows how the toll of lung cancer varies from state to state. And it really looks at key indicators throughout the United States, things such as new cases, survival, early diagnosis, surgical treatment, lack of treatment, and screening rates. And so it really is a place where we can look at a variety of issues among all of the states and then really encourage state officials, policymakers, researchers, and anyone affected by lung cancer to really be able to see how their state does and to see where they can make improvements.
Dr. Rizzo, do you want to talk a little bit about the research itself, how this is done?
Sure. Well, a lot of the data that goes into this report, as well as the other reports we do on tobacco control and air quality, is really based on data collected by other official bodies, CDC, cancer registries that are across the board, North American cancer registries. And there's also some internal research that we do, particularly around Medicaid programs. So the importance of this is that each state has some different rules as to what they collect, how they collect it. And what this report is hoping to show, as Deb said, policymakers and people have to make decisions about where do we go with this data, is to show that sometimes you can do a better job collecting it and collecting things that are more telling about what you can do better to help the population in your state with regard to treatment, availability of treatment, and things of that nature that improve outcome. We know that the detection of lung cancer early on makes a big difference with regard to survival. And part of the study that we've done shows that there's been an increase in survivorship over the last study we did, an increase by 21%, and now it's a 25% survival rate.
Was that the only surprise that you got? I have not. I'm going to tell the truth. I have not been able to see the report yet. It's just been released just a couple of days ago. So were there any surprises? A 25% increase in survivorship is pretty amazing.
Well, 21% increase 25. To 25%. So any progress in survivorship, we find not surprising, but we find it very hopeful. And we're grateful for the report to show that. But the report continues to show trends over the last few years. And remember, this data is from a few years ago. It takes a while for all this data to be tabulated by the different organizations. So we're almost a couple year lag in getting the data out. But it really is helpful for us to know that there continue to be improvement in screening, improvement in early diagnosis, and also trying to improve the number of people who for some reason don't get treatment for their lung cancer, which again is something we really want to hope is not due to disparities, but we realize it is. Access to care is very important, and it's important for us to show this up in our report on a state-by-state basis.
So before we even begin discussing this year's report, we have to be aware that so COVID will not be reflected in what we're seeing here?
I think that's generally the case. I think the last year analyzed is 2019, and it's a four-year prior to that. So it's a collection of 4 years, and COVID will not be reflected in this.
So the impact that it had on people seeking treatment, and unfortunately people who skipped or had no access to screenings during those 2 years, could make the next report look far worse than it
Let's
might
hope not,
be.
But you're right.
Yeah. Oh, so then, well, let's get into it then. What did you learn from this year's State of Lung Cancer report?
Well, I think what we learned in the Delaware Valley, Delaware is among the best for screening, for early diagnosis and treatment of lung cancer. New Jersey is among the best for survival, surgical treatment, and a low smoking rate. They're number three in the nation, actually, at 10.8% of the residents still smoking. And then Pennsylvania was above the average for survival, surgical treatment, and screening. And so there's still a mixed bag of results, but there's still a lot of work for us to do to address lung cancer. As I said, it's the leading cause of cancer deaths. And so you know, we're hoping that this will encourage public leaders in the Delaware Valley to better understand how they can reduce the burden of lung cancer. Couple things that they can start to look at is ensuring that everyone who is at high risk is screened for lung cancer. Dr. Rizzo mentioned that, and I think, you know, it's really important, because if somebody is screened for lung cancer, their cancers are often caught earlier when they're more curable. And so we want to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to be screened. And so just a reminder of eligibility for screening. We know that anyone who is 50 to 80 years of age, who is a 20-pack year history, has that 20-year pack history, meaning they smoked one pack a day for 20 years, two packs a day for 10 years, et cetera, and they're a current smoker or they've quit within the last 15 years, they would be eligible to be screened for lung cancer. And so if somebody doesn't know if they're eligible, they can go to savebythescan.org, and the American Lung Association has a short quiz that they can take to see if they're eligible, and then they can have that conversation with their physician. But some other ways that states can really address the burden is to look at making sure everyone has access to quality and affordable health care, expanding smoke-free laws, and really ensuring that there's funding available for proven prevention and quit smoking programs.
Can we talk a little bit about lung cancer itself, its prevalence? Who gets lung cancer? Is it because we know now from high-profile personalities who've revealed their diagnoses that smoking might be your number one cause, but are we all likely to get it, and why?
Well, first of all, you're right. Smoking is the number one cause, but by no means is it the only cause. And nobody really deserves to get lung cancer, even smokers. So part of our issue is trying to get rid of that stigma around smoking being the main cause of lung cancer. But we know that secondhand smoke can do it. Radon exposure can do it. Poor air quality is listed as a carcinogen by the World Health Organization. Family history can be important. So there are reasons to be aware of lung cancer, even if you're not a smoker. Right now, the screening is really around smoking history. And there are a lot of organizations, including the American Lung Association, trying to broaden the ability to screen individuals who may be at risk for other reasons. And I do want to comment that, you know, Deb made the comment about lung cancer screening being so important for early diagnosis, and it is. And the other part that makes survivorship increase is that we know over the last 10 to 15 years, there's been a big boon in the ability to treat lung cancer with target immunotherapy, immunotherapy, genetic markers. All of these things are playing a role in helping individuals not only with early disease, but later stage disease survive longer. And that's why it's so important that access to care becomes an issue. If you don't have access to quality care, you're not going to have access to the treatments that are newly developed to improve survivorship in lung cancer.
Now, along with the increase in survivorship, are we seeing any decreases in the number of diagnoses? Is that going up? Is it holding steady? What did you find out?
I'll let Deb comment, but I think it's holding steady, unfortunately. I mean, there's been a lot of decrease in smoking over the last several decades, but smoking related to cancer does take decades to develop in many situations.
No, I think you're right. It is holding steady. And I think that that's why screening is so important, is we want to get people diagnosed early so that, as Dr. Rizzo said, we can get the treatments that are appropriate for those individuals as quickly as possible. But we are holding steady. Right now, we only have a small portion, 5.8% of those individuals that are high risk for are being screened. And there's 14.2 million people who could be screened. So it's really important that we increase that, because I think that will help with not only increasing the survival rate, but the early diagnosis will increase the survival rate.
I alluded to your other reports that will come out routinely, and one of them is the state of the air. And in the Delaware Valley here, we live in a region that does have a higher than average particle, I believe, or is it ozone? But ozone,
Both.
oh, great. Now I can really be resting assured of that. But Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, this area does have a higher than average rate. Do we want to talk a little bit about that impact on lung cancer? And where you live does have an effect on how whether or not you
Right.
might be more likely to get it.
No question. I'll start out. Ozone and particulate matter, they don't follow state boundaries. So we're all subject to these pollutants going across, spread by wind. And we even know wildfires that are occurring out west can affect air quality in other parts of the country. And air quality, whether it's the PM2.5 that you allude to, or other carcinogens in the air, as I mentioned earlier, are known to be causes of lung cancer. And when even if you look at a smaller demographic, individuals living near Interstate 95, for example, they have exposure to poor air quality than those that may live in the suburbs in Delaware, New Jersey, or Pennsylvania. So it's not just on a statewide basis or metropolitan area, but even within that, there are individuals who are at higher risk. And unfortunately, that's where some of the disparities come into play, because those individuals who can't afford to live in a suburb are living in the center cities, where there's heat islands and poor air quality is intensified.
We won't even get into the other ramifications of that, asthma and other lung ailments. But now, does this mean that lung cancer kind of does prey on the poor?
Well, the report shows that there's disparities. No question that the diagnosis of lung cancer is later in those in blacks compared to whites. Treatment seems to be less available in non-white populations, and that's shown on a state-by-state basis in our report.
Deb?
I would also add there is that more than half of the 31 million uninsured Americans are people of color. And so, research sure clearly shows us that if you have health care coverage, it impacts people's medical care and ultimately their health outcomes. So, it's one of the reasons that we do highlight and prioritize addressing racial disparities, not only in health care coverage, but in lung cancer care as well.
Hey, if you're just joining us, this is our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the American Lung Association, Dr. Albert Rizzo, he is Chief Medical Officer, and Deb Brown, Chief Mission Officer. For more information about the American Lung Association, they have a lot of information packed onto this website. Go to lung.org. Lung.org. You'll be able to tab over to where you are listening to at this moment. You'll be able to find out more information about the reports and their services and programming and advocacy work. That's lung.org. And don't forget a very important website, savedbythescan.org. If you go there, you can take that survey to find out if you should be requesting that scan, if you qualify for an earlier scan. I was alluding to economics, but then we get into the issues of race and ethnicity and communities. Does lung cancer impact certain communities more so than others? And is it all based on living, unfortunately, in areas along highways or nearer to factories or polluted areas? Who
Well,
gets
those are
lung
some of the things.
cancer?
Go ahead, Deb.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, those are certainly some of the things that make the disparities more evident. As I said earlier, there are a lot of reasons for individuals to develop lung cancer. So there are some family risks or occupational risks, but certainly where you live and the quality of air that you breathe can play a role, even if you are a non-smoker. As far as the genetic reasons are really not clear, and we don't think there's anything more genetic about it than just a family history. But behavior plays a big role in whether or not you have a higher risk of developing lung cancer.
And I will go back to the access to quality and affordable health care. And as I mentioned, cancer survival is really often dependent on the access to that insurance coverage. And people who are uninsured are more likely to be diagnosed with later stage cancer. And as a result, they have poorer outcomes. Smoking rates are often highest among the uninsured, and increasing access certainly to tobacco cessation treatments, and if the person's eligible to lung cancer screening, could definitely make a difference.
Are we looking at prevention or treatment? And included in that treatment part would be the early screening to catch it as early as possible. Is it possible to prevent lung cancer?
Well, what we can do is certainly educate and work on getting rid of the known reasons for people to get lung cancer. Tobacco control, the more people who never smoke or quit smoking, that will decrease the number of those developing lung cancer from tobacco. Improving air quality will prevent a number of people from getting lung cancer. Raising the awareness of radon testing for individuals' homes will improve the decrease the risk of getting lung cancer because you unknowingly were exposed to radon. So there's a lot of things that we have been doing as an organization and promoting individuals to do things on their own. Don't smoke, check for radon, and advocate for clean air. So there is a lot of prevention that can be done. I mean, tobacco is the number one cause of preventable disease and morbidity, not just lung cancer, but heart disease, lung disease. So tobacco control is a big part of improving the situation around lung cancer as well.
And to add on to that, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. And it's a colorless, odorless, radioactive gas that exists naturally in the soil. And I know we're looking at the Delaware Valley area, and I'll just point out that in Pennsylvania, 2 in every 5 homes have detected high levels of radon. So it's really important that people test their homes for radon. And then, you know, if somebody is exposed to radon in their home and they also smoke cigarettes, it seriously increases the lung cancer risk for those individuals.
We used to talk about radon all the time. How did it slip off the radar?
I don't know how it slipped off. But again, I think that it's really, you know, important for people to know that the only way to know if your home has radon is to test it. It comes up through the soil and it enters into homes and buildings through small gaps and cracks. And it's just really important to make sure that testing takes place.
And the Lung Association does a lot of work on radon, work with other organizations. And many states and municipalities actually have incorporated requirements for home sellers to have radon testing done. It's not across the board, but different states have different laws that help improve the radon situation.
What about your advocacy work? And we're not going to talk about tobacco and the T21 bills and things like that. But what about education? Dr. Rizzo, you alluded to occupational damage, occupational threat for lung cancer. Mm-hmm. And I think we've all seen some knucklehead sanding away at something without wearing a respirator. We all know about asbestos, but we all put ourselves at risk fairly constantly for other risk factors.
Right. No, I think some of the things you mentioned we're well aware of, obviously the asbestos situation, and we learn to abate the asbestos. People have to wear appropriate protective gear when they work around known carcinogens. But again, it's an industry that has to be regulated by OSHA and other safety organizations so that individuals who unfortunately have to work in those industries are exposed the least that they can be. And this, again, goes to the disparities issue and access to appropriate knowledge about what you should be asking for in your workplace, what you need to be looking for with regard to potential toxins, and then also having a physician that can be your advocate with regard to being exposed in areas where you need to have some remediation done.
Deb, do you want to talk about Lung Association advocacy work?
Sure. Well, the American Lung Association advocacy is a huge part of the work that we do to meet our mission here at the organization. And so we not only do look at tobacco control policy work, but we also look at making sure that their individuals have affordable and accessible and affordable health care. We are looking at air quality, making sure that we all have healthy air to breathe, making sure we're looking at regulations and laws. And we look at this from a federal standpoint, but we also look at this at each individual state level. And then in some cases, localities, we have work that we do at the local level.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the local level then? If someone is listening to this, they'd like to get involved or they'd like to get more information about it. And do you have programming or classes, et cetera, from the local chapters?
Sure. So the American Lung Association has really put a lot of our programs online over the past couple years because we weren't able to meet in person. But we have smoking cessation programs that individuals can enroll in online, and there are also face-to-face programs. We have programs for individuals who might have COPD or asthma. We have something called Better Breathers Clubs, so individuals can participate in them where they talk with other individuals about the various issues that they might have regarding their disease. We also have tobacco prevention programs for our young people in some of our states. For example, I'll use Delaware. We have something called the Kick Butts Generation and Dante, which is for young adults and high school individuals to become involved in our advocacy efforts. They've had much success over the years. And so there's lots of ways that people can get involved in our advocacy efforts, but there's also lots of programs that they can join to make sure that we're meeting their needs. Anyone can call 1-800-LUNG-USA. That's 1-800-LUNG-USA. That's our helpline. It's open 7 days a week, and we have individuals on the other end of the line who are willing to help you with the resources or answer any questions that you might have. You can also go to lung.org, and there is information there available for individuals on specific programs, questions, diseases, et cetera.
I didn't ask this at the beginning, but you just mentioned asthma, COPD, and obviously we're talking about lung cancer today. Is there a rough number about how many Americans are affected by some form of lung disease or and its impact on the country?
There's about 36 million or 34 million individuals who have some form of lung disease. And so, as you can tell, we have a lot of work ahead of us, and we want to make sure that we have resources available that are beneficial to individuals and their caregivers, individuals who are taking care of these lung disease individuals with lung disease. So, it really is a disease that we don't want anyone to have to feel like they're alone in dealing with it.
Dr. Rizzo, do you want to mention treatments? But you've mentioned that you're seeing higher survival rates, and not all of those are attributed to that's the screening. Sometimes it is the treatment that's actually doing it. How are we faring with our knowledge of our lungs?
Well, not to be repeated, but finding stage one lung cancer by way of screening usually means it can be cured with surgery. That's why it's so important to have access to a physician and a surgeon to get your stage one lung cancer diagnosed with screening and then treated. We now know that there are also more advanced stages two, three, and four, where individuals can have their tumor tested for certain genetic markers. And there are drugs developed that specifically aim at that genetic abnormality and take lung cancer that used to be a survivorship of 3, 4, 5 months of survival on average, now up to individuals living years with these new targeted therapies. And in addition to that, we now have immunotherapies, which target or help the body's immune system fight the cancer in ways that we did not have before. So these therapies are only accessible if you find out you have cancer and have the ability to go to a specialist, an oncologist, and receive treatment with them. So it's so important to diagnose it early. Once it's diagnosed, if it can't be surgically improved or corrected, get into a oncologist, a specialist. Even clinical trials are available now to treat the disease, which used to be months in survivorship. Now some people with advanced lung cancer are living years.
You know, we're close enough. I would like to say, if each of you would like to leave us with, what should we take from this conversation today? Deb, do you want to go first? Or Dr. Rizzo, do you want to start us and give Deb the final word?
I'll let Deb go.
Thank you. yeah, I think the most important message that I would like to leave your listeners with is that lung cancer screening really is the key to early diagnosis. And we know that early diagnosis saves lives. So, well, some of the Delaware Valley is ranked as the best of for different reasons in the nation. It really is imperative that we put some more effort and work into saving more lives.
Dr. Rizzo?
Great advice. And the only thing I would add, I mentioned earlier, tobacco smoking is certainly a number one cause. Tobacco causes a lot of disease. And I think the stigma around tobacco needs to be taken into account as far as individuals not being, there should be credit given to the fact they try to quit. It's an addiction, and tobacco-related disease is not just lung cancer. It's COPD, it's asthma, it's heart disease. It affects diabetes, vascular disease. So we need to be aware that anybody who has smoked can get the diseases, and nobody deserves any of the diseases that we've talked about.
Well, let's take away the stigma of tobacco. But does that give you also a false confidence? If you never were a smoker or didn't live with a smoker, you think, well, I'm not going to get lung cancer.
Well, you worry less because you're not at high risk. But if you listen to everything else we're saying, air pollution, radon, secondhand smoke, all those things along with family history are so important to the diseases you're going to get in your lifetime.
So I should have asked this earlier then, too. When should we call the doctor? What are some of the warning signs that we really should be asking for a screening or to check us out because maybe we're not in that high-risk group because of smoking? Take the smoking away.
We can't take the smoking away because screening only applies to people who have a smoking history, as Deb said. But what you can do is have a good relationship with the physician. If you have any signs, cough, shortness of breath, chest pain, strong family history. Those are the things you discuss with your physician, and he'll decide whether or not a screening is appropriate, but maybe you need other specific testing, a CT scan of the chest for symptoms that exist. It's important. Screening is really just for smokers, unfortunately, at this point, and many people don't have symptoms when lung cancer is first found. That's why it's important to be aware of this and get screened if you have the risk factors.
And, of course, you've already given us that website, and we'll give it again, savedbythescan.org, savedbythescan.org. Go there. It has a quiz. You can find out if you should be getting that scan. Get that screen early, because the earlier, the better, and the more likely that you are going to survive. And thank you both for being on today. Obviously, for more information about anything we talked about, lung.org, that's lung.org. You can give them a call 7 days a week at 1-800-LUNG-USA. That's LUNG-USA. And of course, when you go to their website or if you give them a call, you can find out more about everything from their smoking cessation courses to their advocacy work to how you can get involved. Maybe you're going to become a volunteer or join one of their peer groups that are out there for people who, and caregivers who do have a lung disease of some form. And oh my goodness, 34 million of us affected by lung disease. So the American Lung Association, again, lung.org. My guest today, Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer, and Deb Brown, Chief Mission Officer for the American Lung Association. Thank you both for taking the time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.